Hello, and welcome back to Affirmative Action. I'm your host, Antoinette Grajeda. It's a new year with lots of new things ahead. For us here at Affirmative Action, we're preparing for new episodes in the new year. For you, you may have new goals, a new job, or maybe just that new sense of hope for the future that comes at the start of each year. If you're a student or teacher, it's time for a new semester that promises the continuation of new practices first implemented last year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Shortly after the announcement of the first case of coronavirus in Arkansas in March 2020, schools abruptly shut down and moved to online learning. The final months of the school year were challenging as teachers and students both tried to work through such a swift change to their learning environment, a change many were not prepared for. Over the summer months, districts worked to develop plans to teach on campus, online, or a blended option of the two. During the fall semester, outbreaks and quarantines caused a number of districts with in-person classes to pivot to virtual learning. It's hard to believe, but it's almost been an entire year since the virus upended the lives of teachers, students, and parents, creating a challenging and uncertain time for education. But through it all, teachers have shown resilience and have demonstrated they are up to the task of adapting lesson plans and learning new technologies so they can continue providing an education to Arkansas children. And really, this should come as no surprise. The internet is filled with stories of teachers who go above and beyond for their kids, using their own money to purchase classroom supplies when funding is short, providing hungry students in need with snacks and meals. The list goes on. Teachers often look out for their students, but who's looking out for the teachers? How are they holding up in this stressful environment? To find out, we talked to a group of teachers from across the state. Nanette Patino is a 26-year veteran educator teaching Spanish at Central High School in Little Rock. Cristian Saavedra has been teaching for 7 years. He works at Rogers Heritage High School, where he teaches Spanish and coaches boys soccer. Shante Calhoun is in her third year of teaching. Ms. Calhoun teaches computer science and business classes at Pine Bluff High School and says this year has definitely been difficult.
It's been kind of trying because I'm used to being so active with my students. I also am the FBLA advisor. I'm the TSA advisor. I'm a robotics coach. So I'm prom committee, graduation committee. Like, you know how you do when you're the new kid. You kind of immerse yourself in every single thing. Mm-hmm. And I kind of did that to myself. But I really, really miss my kids, especially my club kids, like my robotics kids, because we're used to being together. We're used to building our robots. I mean, we spend a lot of time together. And just seeing them via Zoom or via Google Meets, it's kind of hard because I'm used to, you know, having that hands-on with them. So not seeing my kids every day and not really connecting with my students on a daily basis has been a little trying.
Do you have on-site students as well, or are all virtual?
I do have, depends on how they feel, if they feel like coming to school that day. I have somewhere between 3 and maybe 7 students that are in class. We don't switch classes. The students stay in my class from 8 to 12:45. They eat lunch in my class. They bring their lunches brought to class and they eat in class. So that keeps, you know, kind of combat, you know, the outside going in and out or, you know, being around other people. So they're in my room. They're 6 feet apart. Anytime they leave my room, when they come back, they have to put on hand sanitizer. They have to, you know, kind of disinfect, you know, their area, you know, every time, you know, they go in and out. So, but yeah, it's kind of weird not having.
Is it by choice or by design that they don't all show up? Or is it like, what's the district policy as far as like, you know, in-person or virtual attendance?
The students kind of had a choice if they wanted to be virtual or if they wanted to be on campus. Probably about, I say out of our 800 students, 800 some odd students. We might have 150 on campus.
Do you see that they're moving from on-site to virtual as the year transpires?
Actually, no. I actually had more at the beginning of the school year, and they kind of switched over to virtual. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, it's like as a parent myself, my daughter has asthma and she had a heart condition. So we elected to not let her go to school in the beginning, but it was a struggle even for her. And me being a teacher, it was a struggle for her.
It's just hard. Yeah, there's a lot of hard. I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's like you have to learn what you need for your job, and then you have to help your student.
Right.
And if you have a student at home, you need to help, you know, them at home. It's just, you know, that the hats are multiplying by leaps and bounds, you know, through this whole experience.
Yes, it is. It's so weird that, you know, you help your kids at school, and then the most trying part is trying to teach via email. That's the biggest trial is I have my email up all day, my students email back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Sometimes, and I tell my students, if I haven't responded to you in 24 hours, email me again, because I probably have gotten about 50 emails today.
So I've also been curious about hybrid teaching, where teachers are teaching in person but also online at the same time. Isn't that something that you're doing, Nanette? What is that like? Is that like you have a camera in the back of the room for the people at home, or you have to do like two separate things?
Well, in the beginning, I didn't really know what I was going to be successful at, you know? So we did a couple of trial and errors, you know? So we were encouraged to either do a Zoom or work on Teams. Do you guys know Microsoft Teams? So I had to get used to using, you know, one particular format. So I decided that if I needed to use the Schoology, and Schoology had the Teams, then I was going to, you know, work that way. So at the beginning, I had my smart board up, and I had my computer up, I'm at my laptop, and I had my desktop, and I was here and there and here. And I remember one day I was like, oh, I'm feeling lightheaded, guys. Wait a second. I was just exerting myself to the point when I'm trying to do everything so that I have my students virtually, you know, attending to what we're doing. And I didn't want the students that were on site to be bored while they had to wait for the other students to respond. So I spoke to a colleague, and they were saying that they were also, you know, in a pickle to see, you know, which way was the best. And they said that they were going to do, everybody was going to be virtual. Mm-hmm. So my on-site students, they were communicating with me and the other students by the same platform in the same way at the same time. And that actually has worked. The only thing is that you get students that are quiet. Mm-hmm. And so you put them in a setting that they don't want to turn on their camera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm like, so what are you guys doing? And I'm like, hello, I need an answer, you know? But they got the swing of things. I got the swing of things as I wanted to go and swim through uncharted waters. You know, I was like, okay, guys, you're going to be my guinea pigs. We're going to see if this works, you know? And then little by little, like I started to implement different practices like a Kahoot and doing online, you know, videos, you know? And so I started to do a couple of things, and I'm like, don't hate me if this doesn't work, you know? Plan B is, you know, whatever. And like a teacher, I mean, because when I started teaching, you know, many years ago, nothing is today as it was back then, right? Because we continue to evolve. There's certain things that are always the same, you know, like you need to be teaching, you know, and the kids need to be learning, and that's the fundamental. And if that's not going on, then you need to reevaluate what you're doing. But you sort of have to be creative. And if you're a person that doesn't feel comfortable taking risks, this is a, you know, this is a sink kind of situation. You have to, you know, be proactive. So the students, you know, when I open up my class, everyone has to be on the teams. I take attendance that way. Every week I have a folder, I do a PowerPoint, and I give them their activities, their class activities, and their homework assignments. I give them time during our class sessions because we have AB days. I don't know if you guys have AB days. I have six classes, Christian.
And hey, in my defense, my first year. Listen, I put in my work, okay? My first year, I thought, let's say I was teaching broadcast. I don't know how to do broadcast. So I was teaching broadcast. I was teaching personal finance, sixth grade intro to foreign language, which has three languages in there. Spanish one, native one. So every single class was different. And here it is. I didn't have a classroom. So I was on a cart. I was in two different buildings and I was the head coach for the team. So I don't remember what happened that year, but it feels this year has felt a lot like that year.
So you did good.
I guess, because I survived. I don't know.
Well, as a coach, what have you had to do differently that way? Because that's definitely in person.
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest difference, I think it has been sort of a okay year for me because my mentors have always been, you know, big on relationships and that's what keeps everybody together. So I think that's what's helped me survive with all of this that's going on. But as far as on the coaching aspect, it's like today we're missing four players, right? And so you create plans and then, you know, there's four out of 20 on the varsity team that don't show up or because of the quarantine or whatever reason. So there's been a lot of adjusting at times, and you know, there's been a couple good weeks where you can catch a flow, but then, you know, like today, we're in the middle of it and now you got to restart. And then, so then when those kids come back, it's not just like missing one or two days, you know, that's 10 whole days. And now you got to restart and reteach. And in the classroom, I think it's a little easier with resources and all that. With soccer, because it's such a dynamic sport, it's difficult. It's been a difficult year. I have everything on a long spreadsheet where I've planned out the next 9 weeks, and I reflect. Like after this meeting, I'll go on that spreadsheet and I'll reflect on how today went. And I'm like, literally, it's been the most detailed year I've ever had because I need to have little snaps of where we were in each week. Mm-hmm. And I'm highlighting missing pieces or missing players so that I know I'm going to have days where remediation is going to happen, where I need to go back. And just because they jumped in on week 7, it doesn't mean that they learned some of those skills that were necessary. I never really had to do that with soccer, as far as if I was gonna reteach something, it was because the team needed to reteach it. But to be able to split it up and pull just those kids, you know, that's normal in a classroom, but in soccer, it basically just has turned into another extension of the classroom, which it should be that way. It's just for different reasons, obviously. But it's been dynamic. I mean, it's been
when you do your soccer with the kids, do you guys use masks and stuff? Like, how do you, you know?
Absolutely. You know, so I'm married to a nurse, so I'm always being told what's safe and what's not safe, and just because the CDC puts it out there, you know, it's not always the best at times. And so for our boys, there's really no time other than when we play 11v11 that they can take their mask off. And the guidelines are, is if they're actively participating, they can take them off, right? Mm-hmm. Which people can interpret that different ways. So like some people interpret it as if their heart rate is elevated at a certain point, then they can take it off. Well, the way I explain it to my boys is like, we don't have heart rate monitors at all times, so where I can look at an iPad and know when their heart rate is above. And so I just decided from day one that if we're there, if we're training, unless on Fridays, it's an easier day. During the warm-up, they wear them. And as soon as the ball gets rolling 11v11, where there's a lot more space, then they don't have to wear it. But Monday to Thursday, at all times, they're wearing their mask. I'm wearing my mask. And we've been, you know, honestly, we have been really good with not having a lot of kids contracted there. A lot of them have gotten it at home during mm-hmm. the weekends or at a family gathering or, you know, somewhere else.
So your school didn't get shut down for any?
No, you know, and our principal was very, very proactive on a lot of aspects of our year. And he really talked to us about from the beginning, you know, it's going to be a difficult year. It's going to be a trying year, but we have to be proactive. So we were talking about plan B and pivoting and all that early on. And we had a special training for all those different tools. And we are ready. Like everybody at our school has to have those agendas to where if a student is not there, they have that access to the agenda, right? And then we also started with a large population of our students that were doing virtual learning, which for us, it's a company called Red Comet. And a lot of our kids weren't having a lot of success in those classes. So again, our principal went back and looked at that plan and started making some phone calls and talking to parents and talking to kids and reaching out to kids. And I think, you know, they made over 150 calls in one day at times, just trying to reach kids that sometimes we didn't even know where they were. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I think, I don't know the exact number, but I know that a lot of our kids have chosen to come back and we haven't been shut down. We have a one-way traffic. They worked that out magically. We have a way to walk to where like there's no big crowds. There's restrictions on everything we do. There's, you know, we have to turn in sitting charts and there's no small grouping. And so a lot of the tools that we needed, I do believe that it has to do with the proactiveness of our principal that said from the beginning, you know, we need to do this and we need to do it all at once and prepare. I think it has been difficult. I think, again, relationships have helped me as far as staying communicated with kids. I have an app called Band. It's essentially like a messaging app. And, you know, like it made me really happy today during the day where like the kids that were at home were sending memes on there about like, you know, when you're sitting at home watching Netflix for the fifth day and you have nothing else to do. And so we have a really tight community with our school that I think helps us out. And again, I got to give props to our principal because he has been proactive about the whole thing.
Well, it sounds like you guys have all adapted as well as can be expected under these circumstances. Something that I've been curious about is how are your students doing in terms of the actual learning? I've read different stories of, you know, studies of different schools about how they're not doing as well because it's virtual. What are you seeing in your classrooms? I mean, are they still, obviously it was difficult at the beginning because it was new, it was different, it was strange, but are they getting the hang of the material now or are some of your students or are a lot of them still struggling?
I think for me, a lot of my students are very much still struggling. I think sometimes our kids' minds are still on vacation from the summer and we're over in January. You know, I'm constantly sending emails. I'm constantly, you know, trying to call parents. I'm constantly trying to get in contact with my students. I'm Google Classroom every, you know, all the time. Okay, we, you know, we're doing this assignment this week. You all need to, you know, you haven't, you know, turned this assignment in. I mean, it's almost like beating a dead horse sometimes, trying to get your students to do their assignments. And even over the break, I told my kids, okay, if you have not finished, if you have some assignments that you haven't done, you know, you have 2 weeks over the break. I know you really don't want to use your break, but you have not done the assignments, you know, in the regular semester. So, you know, you got 2 weeks to, you know, try to get your assignments caught up. Like I just did grades for the last semester I just did them last week. So, you know, just trying to be, you're trying to be as compassionate as possible. Because me, if we were in regular school, I have a no excuse policy in my classroom. Unless you're dying, somebody's dying, you've been in a car accident, you're in the hospital. I don't accept excuses as to why my assignments are not completed. This year, it's been totally different. It's been totally different. And we have given a student too much room is detrimental.
I would like to chime in on that one you just said, because I think, you know, as I think back of the normalcy of what it used to be, it's interesting for me because I got to do both at times where sometimes I'm the teacher emailing kids and asking them to turn stuff in. And then on the flip side, I'm the coach that's talking to teachers about some of my players and what's going on and asking for grace. And I think there's two ways to look at it. And I think it sounds like you're adapting really well to it for your students. I just think because of how difficult it's been just for the teachers, I think the best way to look at it is like, we have to lead with grace with these kids. And there is no way to not harm the rigor of our teaching. There's no magic formula for it.
Right. It's kind of a double-edged sword, really, because if you're not doing the rigorous that you normally would do, are your kids really learning?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I don't know that that's the focus right now with what's going on. I think because here's what you have to think about it too, that some of those kids, they come for our classes. They come for electives, right? And that's no offense to any core classes, but I do think that a lot of times it's those fun classes that they come for. And even if a kid might not be doing their work at home, there's still the amount of times that we've had to have conversations about mental health issues in my class this year is insane. I mean, we actually made a hoodie, my third hour, the sign with the word friend in Spanish in the front and the suicide hotline on the back. And like, we've always had a conversation, but it never got that deep to where we needed merchandise. And like, we actually made hoodies for that just because I think the part that's missing at times is like, just like we're feeling the pressure. There are some of these kids whose parents are losing jobs. There are some mm-hmm. of these kids who are taking care of siblings when they're staying home. Or here's another thing. I've lost players because they, you know, families sometimes got the taste of what it felt to have an extra income coming in. And now when everybody shifted back to school, those kids never went back. And so now they are being forced to work. And so it's such an eclectic situation in which I think there's no way out. I mean, if there is, somebody hasn't sold it to us, but
It isn't because I was at the grocery store one day last week, and I'm not good with names. Like, my kids have to sit in the same seat every single day or I'm gonna forget what their name is. And I call all my kids by their last names because some of them have some names that I don't want to butcher. Because people butcher my name all the time. I'm always have to tell people how to pronounce my name. So I call my students by their last name because I don't feel like it's disrespectful unless they're, you know, they're not trying to say your name correctly. So I call my kids by their last name. So anyway, I was at the grocery store and one of my students, everybody had a mask, so I really don't recognize them. She's like, Miss Calhoun, I'm gonna get your work done, but I'm just working two jobs right now. And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, I'm working two jobs. I'm like, why are you working two jobs? She's like, because I gotta take care of my siblings. And I'm like, where's your mom? She's like, that's a long story, Miss Calhoun, but I'm gonna get your assignments done. I was like, listen, just look at the no, because you give them more assignments than we grade. And I'm like, just do the assignments that I'm grading. Look on your heck, see the assignments that I'm grading, do those. Don't worry about the other ones. And we have case after case after case like that, that we don't really know what our kids are really going through. So we're saying,
and that's why,
But that's, we don't know.
The first thing that we need to do is, you know, build that relationship with the student. Mm-hmm. And just talk with them. And, you know, that's like the first thing that you're doing, you know, those first couple of weeks of school, you know, while you're establishing your rituals and your routines, just like when you are in elementary school, the same rules apply for the bigger kids. Now, mm-hmm. like you, I did have one or two students that were sort of like lagging behind. And then I found out that they were working. Some of them didn't come back. Some of them decided to, you know, to stay, you know, just different things. So definitely that's a reality. Like you're saying, that parents and the students are dealing with siblings, taking care of siblings. I have a student who also, you know, he's like, Ms. Patiño, I'll be on in a minute. I was just, you know, babysitting my XYZ and whatever. And so I understand that. And I understand that if we don't make some accommodations for them, it can be a little bit more difficult than what they're already experiencing. But I also believe that consistency and clear expectations are just as important. And so if one of my students, you know, is having a problem, I'm calling the house, I'm calling the counselor, I'm trying to be, you know, like what the word that Christian used, you know, that proactive mm-hmm. person to see what's going on and what I can do. But it's a challenge when the students don't have a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. So one thing is, I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed with my class. And the second option is, I don't care about this class. That's right. Two totally different mentalities, and I have to address it in two different ways. So and what about IEP kids, 504 kids? I like to hear what you guys are doing, you know, to give me some ideas, because, you know, it's really challenging when you want to be fair. I make accommodations. And some of the students, you know, they've really risen to the occasion. And I tell them, I love you. And because I love you, I'm going to be on you like white on rice. And I'm not going to let you go. You're not going to just throw in the towel. This is how it is.
Right.
And then on top of that, you're learning a language and my mouth is covered. How do you see how I pronounce and how do you? It's just hard. And then I had a little girl, you hear me? I had a student and she was like, I hate this class. And then she said, not you, you know? So it's just, I know that they're, you know, that they're needy on a lot of different, you know, levels, but I need for them to know that if their best is 75% of that class, then give me the best of that 75%.
Right.
And I don't want to have anything less, because when this is over, we can have a whole generation on the downslope. And that is scary.
I think, you know, honestly, I think it's interesting when you talk about like the impact that's going to have in future generations, because I starting to, like, when looking at the U.S. and the situation that we're in right now, I'm starting to see some of the same things being exposed that a lot of our less developed countries have had to deal, right? And a little bit of where I grew up, until I was 13 years old, I grew up in El Salvador, where you know, you have to pay for education. Like, I tell my kids a story all the time about, I almost didn't go to third grade because I didn't have like the equivalent of $20 to sign up for the class. And then you have to pay for uniforms because you got to wear uniforms every day. And so you talk about, you know, kids that want to go to school or don't want to go to school, or when they're there, are they giving you their best? And then when they're going home, they're having to be adultish. And I think what's interesting is a lot of the issues that we're seeing right now, and as far as from having grown up in a different country and now being here, a lot of the issues that we're seeing now, I think they've been issues, they've been lacking. It's just they haven't been brought up to the forefront because there wasn't the need, or there was always a way to mask certain things. So for example, as I was thinking about today's conversation, that's what are some things that we struggle with, right? Right when things shut down, I worked with a couple other coaches on delivering Chromebooks. Once again, I'll give my principal another shout out, because like we gave every kid that sent us a form, we gave him a Chromebook back then when nobody was doing it. And so we drove, like we, I think 150 I deliver. And so like we went everywhere. And that was really a good experience for me to see where some of these kids were living. And I can tell you that we got to certain houses where parents were like, I can't take that because we can't use it. We don't have internet. You know, we have to drive 20 minutes into where we could get internet. And I work and I just can't, my kid doesn't drive and it's in the mountains. And so I think a lot of the issues, you know, for example, access to internet, I think that shouldn't be something that's sold. I think that's something that should be just a given. If we expect kids to work at home, lately Cox has come up with the affordable $20 plan and all that. To me, $20 might not be a lot. I'm sorry?
You get hotspots?
No, it's not a hotspot. Some schools have hotspots. Available.
We gave our kids hotspots.
Yeah, so we didn't. I think, well, I'm not aware that it was a widespread. I know we had some available, but I'm not aware that our school, how they deliver those. But the point is, we have so many kids that have been asked to do certain things with the assumption that they have reliable internet, with the assumption that they have a way to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, comparing it to a third world country, and I mean no disrespect to anybody that loves America, but I just mean that that's been an issue. It wasn't because of the pandemic. And so when you think about, I know I'm guilty of giving kids homework where they needed to work at home with their internet access, like where they needed to finish a slide, where they needed to do things like that. And now I've had to think about that. When I'm giving them homework, I'm thinking, I need to do a survey and see how many of them have internet at home. And
well, don't you give them opportunity during the class to get that work done because, you know, of those kinds of challenges?
So even if you give, I do, but even if you give kids, you know, let's say 100 opportunities, there's going to be times where that work is going to be necessary to be done, you know, at home.
And completely.
And so that's, and not only if you give them time there, but with the situation we're in right now, when you have a student that has been quarantined 3 times,
oh, wow.
Right? And so how do you get them to do certain things if they don't have reliable internet?
Right.
And so I know that Cox has an affordable $20 plan, like I mentioned, but even then they have to fill out an application. We have some
and
parents
they can't
that
get, help. And they can't get rejected, because when all this broke mm-hmm. out, I was teaching in elementary school and I spent hours day after day, not only helping my students, but helping my parents and teaching them how to do this. And so I'm like, I'm there, I'm learning it, and I'm like, okay. And I'm speaking in Spanish and, you know, and the kids, and then, you know, it's like, I'll get something from, I was the only Spanish, well, there's me, there was me and another one, another Spanish speaking teacher, you know, but the parents for the most part knew me and they felt more comfortable. So it's like, Miss Patiño, blah, blah, blah. And it would be 9 o'clock. And I'm talking to parents, we need this, or I just got off of work. And, you know, that's a reality that made me cry for days on end, you know, to see my students in such a need, to see my parents in such despair, you know. And we, you know, we see our, you know, Black and Latino families, you know, that are struggling, or even our white families that are, you know, low income families as well. You know, everyone has a different, you know, take on what's happening. But, you know, just going back to what it is that I think that we need to do, you know, it's like, I know that this is difficult, but we got to keep with it. This is what we've done. We have kept with it. We have learned how to, you know, maneuver new technology. We have learned how to make, you know, Teams and Zooms and all, and we've learned so many things. And for the most part, many, many students have learned, you know, sometimes it may not always be the academic that they learned, but whatever it is, you know, they learned that you care about them. You know, they learned that even through trials and challenges, you can still, you know, persevere and, you know, and be successful, you know, and that success is measured in different ways at different times of your life, you know? And so, you know, even though the academic, you know, can be sort of like a wave, you know, coming in and out, but they have learned to survive. And I think that as a veteran teacher, there's nothing that I can say to convince me that I haven't learned volumes. And there's nothing to say that the kids haven't learned. And even today, I was like, one of the kids was telling me something. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that. Okay, I learned something new. And I'm very purposeful in saying, oh, I thank you for teaching me this, because I want them to see, I don't know it all. And it's okay if you don't know it all, you know, we learn together.
And I think that's another, you know, another point that I had was that the first one is, you know, access to internet. I think we need to address that and we need to figure out how to make that just like we have utilities. We need kids to have that, right? Like that's just, it should be a given. The other one is how we measure intelligence, right? Like I know a lot of intelligent people that never did anything because they thought they weren't intelligent. And then I'm looking at them like, you're one of the smartest people I know. And this, once again, this pandemic has put a mirror in front of us and taught us that what happens when your standardized tests don't work.
Right.
What happens
I've never felt like standardized tests really told me anything about my kids. Because I know in my district, our kids are at a reading deficit severely. We have high school kids that read on an elementary level. And the platform that we're using, Edgenuity, is on grade level. And I feel like that's some of the reason why our kids are struggling. And that's some of the reason why I use different supplemental resources like Test Out, ICEV, and Adhesive, because it's the same material, but it's on a level that my kids can understand and get. And to piggyback on what I don't want to say your name wrong, Christian.
It's Christian. Yeah, it's Christian. Okay. Like the religion Christian. Yeah.
It definitely, this pandemic has definitely put a spotlight on what we have been lacking in education. And like you said, a lot of things have been masked and a lot of things have been looked over. And like I said, the biggest thing is our kids' reading level, especially if we're sending them home with online work. And if you can't read and comprehend what you're supposed to be doing, you're not going to be successful. And that's something that we really need to look at. Now, at our high school, we do have, and at the junior high level as well, I'm sure elementary too, but there is a reading class. If you didn't make a specific score on the ACT Expire, then you're automatically enrolled into this reading class, which I think is very, very beneficial for our kids, because if you can't read, you can't do anything else. I mean, reading is the base of every subject. And if you can't read and you can't comprehend what's going on, you're not going to be successful. So that has really put a spotlight on just our reading deficit. That's one of the big things that I've learned with the pandemic and our kids learning online, is that we have to meet them where they are. And we have to, I mean, we can't bring them from a fifth grade level to 11th grade level in 1 year, but we definitely need to shoot for bring them from a fifth grade to a sixth grade or a seventh grade. I mean, that we have to bridge that gap. And
I think
as a teacher, I don't know how we do that, but I see that that's something that we need to do.
And I think that something to be said is the fact that obviously we're all biased here when we say the teachers have been doing this for a while, but I mean, I'm a product of my teachers going above and beyond that I made it out, and it has taken a village to help me get to where I am. And I think it's interesting because here we are talking about what we're doing well, what we're learning, what's working, what's not working. And the constant is that teachers are once again trying to figure it out, learning new things, learning new acronyms, learning new recording devices. And we have been doing whatever we could. We have been being counselors and mentors and whatever we needed to be to make sure our kids learn. And one of the rhetorics at times that I remember was, you know, at least when I told people I want to be a teacher, it was like, oh, why? You know, like, and it's like, we are the problem at times, and public education is the problem at times. And I think this, once again, this pandemic has put a spotlight on the fact that we solve the problems. We want to be the solution. We work hard to be the solution. And at times there are certain things that we can't control that keep us from solving those problems. And so, you know, like I said, internet access. And then you got to think about it too. If we've struggled to learn all those new platforms, how about parents that have never had to deal with that? And, you know, and a lot of those parents that didn't, I think we have this crazy assumption that because people have social media, they're good with technology.
Right.
Okay. And I've had Facebook and I had MySpace and I had a bunch of stuff back then, but doesn't mean I've still had to learn new platforms. Right. And I can imagine, you know, I have a little dog, that's it, but I don't have another human to take care of. I can imagine doing my regular job and then coming home and learning something else. And I think once again, you look at who's putting the pieces together, and we're here and we're doing our best. And a lot of the systematic issues that's keeping us from reaching those kids have nothing to do with what happens within the classroom.
Right. And I think you've all made a really good point about how many different hats you wear as a teacher and how you're trying to solve all of these problems. So as we wind down our conversation, I want to turn the focus back to you as teachers. This has been a lot. You do a lot normally, but this has been a lot on top of a lot. Mm-hmm. So how is your mental health? Because when you think about it, you've been asked to do your job in a potentially dangerous environment, an environment that's dangerous for your health. When you found out that you were still going to have to go to school and potentially be at risk, mm-hmm. you know, were you afraid? And yes, with the vaccine, as we're recording this, you know, the governor has announced that in a couple of days, teachers will be eligible to start receiving vaccines. So, you know, with that added piece, does that help? Are you excited? You know, where are you mentally?
I think for me, being a Christian, even though my church is closed and we are, you know, having church online, that has been the biggest help for me as far as like mental health. Do I have it all together all the time? Absolutely not. But the good thing
sure you do.
Oh, right. The good thing about it is I have some awesome, awesome coworkers, and they are hilarious at times. And we try to find the humor in the situation. Like, you know, we all are very cautious. We've had, you know, a couple of teachers that, you know, had COVID, you know, some of them, you know, were very, very ill. But I think that finding the humor in some situations, just staying prayerful, and being as careful as you can, has really, you know, I haven't had, you know, a breakdown yet, thank God. But, you know, it is trying. It is, you know, it does, you know, work on your mental health. Mm-hmm. And as far as the vaccination, I'm not 100% convinced with the vaccination. I'm just not. And at this point right now, I'm declining to get the vaccination. I tell when people ask me why you don't, I kind of put it in the tense of, you know, when the new iPhone comes out and it has all these bugs in it and all these kinks in it. And when you first get it, it crashes and does all this crazy stuff. So you really need to wait like 3 or 4 months after it comes out for them to work all the bugs out before you get the new iPhone. That's how I am with the vaccination.
And I appreciate that. You know, that was a great illustration. So thank you. I'm going to use that. Okay. I'm like, Ms. Calhoun told me this. Okay. For me, during the summer, well, I'll tell you that last year I was an elementary school ESL math teacher. And then this year I'm in high school. So with that only, that was an incredibly stressful transition for me. On top of that, this whole, you know, COVID thing. And I'm diabetic. So I was a little bit, you know, concerned in terms of, you know, my health and my daughter, who at that time was 11, her birthday was last week and my birthday was yesterday. So you guys get the best of it.
Happy belated birthday.
Yeah, seriously.
So, I was a little bit skeptical. So I went and I made sure that I had my physical and making sure that my wellness check, you know, was all good and making the precautions, you know, that I needed for myself. And my husband, of course, said, you know, I'd rather you, you know, stay with my daughter. I said, I can't, because mm-hmm. I need to work. And if work is open, that's where I need to be. And my daughter needs to be, you know, at school. And that's just the way it is. You know, and just like Ms. Calhoun, I'm, you know, I'm a person, you know, that follows Christ and whatnot. And I said, well, I'm going to do my best. This is what I do. And I expose myself daily to a lot of things. Doesn't have to be COVID.
Right.
It could be an irate parent that got upset because I gave the kid a wrong low grade or whatever, you know? And I'm from New York, so I've seen a couple of things. and you know, it's like for me, staying rooted, you know, in my family, in my faith, staying as active as I possibly can in the things that I do. But yeah, Ms. Calhoun, I'll give it to you because I have had my breakdown and I was like, oh my God, what is this? You know, and I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's get back up on the horse and we're going to try this again, you know, with a good, you know, good attitude. And I'll use this illustration. My daughter says to me this morning, she's like, well, you know what, Mom? Sometimes I just have to talk to myself. And I think that when people talk to themselves, you can become positive. You can change the way you're thinking. And I said, well, you're speaking to your soul. You know, it's like, hey, you can do this. Get back up, you know, forge ahead. You know, you're not going to be the first one. You're not going to be the last one. You know what I'm saying? But you're going to do the best that you can. And so, you know, just trying to keep your perspective where it is. You know, when you start worrying about so many variables, it's very easy, you know, to lose sight of what you need to do. You know, and I need to be sane for myself and for my family and for my students so that I know how I can best address their needs when they're in front of me or, you know, thereafter. So that's something that I, you know, that I need to do for myself. But yeah, sometimes I'm just, I've had it. This is crashing. This is not working. I'm going to throw this out, you know, and then it's like, okay, I'm calm. You know, I want to walk. I want to do a little, you know, some exercise. So I envy Chris because, you know, he's out there working. I can't work out all that time, you know, because I just don't have it like that with six classes. I'm sorry, Chris. But in terms of the vaccine, I'm not convinced. And I'm not saying that whoever wants to, you know, you're in, you know, in all your right to do that. I have some reservations, you know, on it. And thank God I'm healthy right now. And I hope that I continue, you know, to follow all the precautions, you know, that have been set. And I use my mask and wash my hands and do all of the things that we're supposed to be doing. And so although they have had breakouts in my building, things have been, you know, pretty much under control. We only had a shutdown one time, but I'm gonna wait and see. And I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of questions still, you know, there. And I know as a leader, and we are all leaders, right? Or you're a teacher, you're a leader. Those are the conversations sometimes, you know, to be had with students. But there's a time and a place for everything. And I think, you know, when I need to cross that bridge, you know, then I'd consider it, you know, at a different level.
I think, especially at the beginning, I had a rough time mentally. I was dealing with, I just ran for the first time in a long time on Saturday because I tore my Achilles playing soccer 7 months ago. I don't know, a long time ago. And I just now, this past Saturday, I was able to run for the first time. And so at the beginning, I think it was really rough for me because I wasn't able to coach just in the same way I coach. I wasn't able to move. You know, I like mountain biking. I like playing soccer. I like being outdoors. And so that was that, plus the pandemic, plus classes were different. I'm not able to do the same grouping work that I do. I talk a lot and I have a lot of energy, so I like my classroom to look like that. That was different with assigned seating and all of that. And there were a couple of times where, you know, I had to call a few people that some of my mentors and have them remind me what this whole thing is about. And I think where I am now with how close we are to finishing this year, I think I'm back where I feel balanced, where I feel, you know, like I'm waking up in the mornings and walking my dog, to where I'm doing the things that I love. And mentally, I think when it came down to it and I felt overwhelmed, I just went back to what got me excited to be in the school, and which is my students. And I promised them I would give them a shout out. So I have something for each class that I have to say how they helped me through this whole thing.
Okay.
Because as I was talking about it today, I was telling, you know, I might do a podcast this afternoon. They always tell me, hey, you need to record some of your motivational TED Talks. I'm like, sure. So honestly, though, I know, you know, I'm kidding a little bit, but honestly, I think my students have helped me tremendously to get through this whole thing. And, you know, on the days where you throw in a lesson and it's like the technology is not working and your smart board is not working and you don't have copies because you thought it was going to work. And I'm on my seventh year, right? Like, you would think I would have had that figured out by now. But that's just, we never have to think about that many issues. And it's always been, whatever class it was, it always, coach, it's okay. We can just Google it. Here's this app where you can just send it to us and we can do this. And it just, without that community, without going back to the core of why I'm there, I think I would gone crazy with everything, all the pressure. So my first hour, you know, obviously they get me started. One of the things that I do is when I wait for them in the outside of the classroom, each class, to greet them. And then when I walk in, I'll greet them in Spanish and they have to greet me back. And if it's not like, you know, I'm big on energy. So if it's not the right energy, I walk in a few times until they give me the right energy. And I always tell my first hour, like, they're the starters of the mood I'm gonna have that day. They gotta get me going on that day and pump me up so that I can be ready to go for the rest of the day. And they have done a phenomenal job at that. Second hour, they keep that going. They're crazy, but they keep that going. And so actually that class, there's a student that talks about One Direction all the time. And it's funny because it's a good reminder of like, hey, there's still a world out there. Like, there's still things happening. Relax and remember what you're here for. And she sometimes goes in, that student sometimes goes in and does little videos on Flipgrid that have nothing to do with Spanish, but it's just like a funny vlog and we just watch it. And like, we get class started with stuff like that. And that's always a good, you know, comedic break. My third hour are the biggest advocates, mental health advocates I've ever seen. Like I said, we came up with hoodies in that class. I was joking with them a little bit. And I was like, well, you all want to make some shirts or something? They called the printing company. They asked for permission from the principal. They did it all, and we sold over 100 hoodies throughout the school.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're amazing. My fourth hour, they can kind of sense. They're very similar. That class, that's a whole, very similar to how I run my day, and they're very similar to the whole energy idea that I was talking about. Because today they asked me, "You look a little tense. Like, what's going on?" And I told them I was nervous about speaking English this late in the day. Because, man, I'm struggling. I'm using all my caffeine pause as possible. And so they talked me up. They were like, "It's okay. You got this. You've been preparing for this. You give us TED Talks all the time. Like, you're gonna do great." And before they left, like, they were like, "Come on, you got this. You're gonna do great." And it's just little things like that that for me remind me of why I'm there. Again, it's like every class has their own little thing. And today was one of those days where I needed that group, and I had to remind myself, why am I there? How am I going to channel this anxiety that I felt all day towards positivity? And they were great at that. And then the last one is fifth hour. Fifth hour is like when you put a bunch of kids that would never hang out with each other outside of the classroom. And at first, like, it was the quiet kids, the talkative kids, the sport, the athletes, the kids that don't, the gamers. And somehow we've had a couple of talks about the fact that they have managed to be respectful. They have managed to talk it out when they have disagreements in the classroom. And what I always think of that class is like, if only our country was a little more like my fifth hour, we would be in a lot better place. My soccer kids are the end of the day, and we spend lots of hours there on that field. And overall, I think to describe my mental health, if I didn't do this job, if I was doing something different where I didn't have the kids that I have, my students to keep me going, if I was all virtual, I would struggle personally, because I feed off of the energy that I receive from people. And you know what I mean? So I thank God that I have the students that I do, and they really do every day remind me of why I'm there. And they give me the energy to continue to go and continue to work hard for them.
It has very much been a crazy year for you guys, and we so appreciate your resiliency and your ability to adapt and everything that you've done for our kids. And I hope that you do feel that appreciation in some way, some form, somehow. And personally, I want to truly thank you for all of the time that you've given us here today. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to share. It's been a fun conversation.
Yeah, thank you for the invite.
Our guests today were Arkansas educators Nanette Patino, Cristian Saavedra, and Shante Calhoun. If you're interested in learning how to support Arkansas teachers, reach out to your local district and ask if there's anything they need. I'm sure they'd appreciate the assistance. Thanks again to these teachers for sharing their experiences with us. We wish you and your students a successful spring semester. Well, that's all for today's episode. And remember, you can listen to past episodes of our podcast at argotsoul.com/affirmativeaction. You can also subscribe and rate our show on Apple Podcasts. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next month with a brand new episode. Until then, take care.